We have the opportunity tonight, Baruch Hashem, to address some of the halachos of Yom Kippur. But I first wanted to focus a little bit on a perspective on Yom Kippur. We tend to look at Yom Kippur, and rightfully so. We call them Yomim Noraim. And certainly, there is no day in the Jewish calendar which we should approach in a fashion which is as Nora as Yom Kippur. It's an awesome day. It's a day of Chesimas HaMishpot. It's a very serious and somber day. And yet, because of that, which is true, we lose totally lose sight of an equally important perspective. And one that from our standpoint is almost difficult to relate to. Rabbi Yonah writes in the Shara Tshuva that why is it that there's a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? And he gives the obvious reasons that if a person has to fast such a long and difficult fast, then there's a necessity to eat before. So the Torah even made it a mitzvah. There's the inyan that it brings that is an inyan of Kavod Hayayim, and since we can't conduct a Kiddush on Yom Kippur, so the celebration is pushed up one day. And it's also marking, it's covered for Yom Kippur. These are classic reasons. And Rabbi Yonah gives a phenomenal answer to the question. And this is the reason that there's a mitzvah to eat and drink on Erev Yom Kippur. This is the day of Simcha. What's the Simcha? The Simcha is that if a person violated a Leisa, say, any time during the year, and even if he did Tshuva, but the case, the file is still open. And if the file is still open, he could Chas V'Shalom be subject to Midas Adin. On Yom Kippur is the time that the Rabbanu Shalom gives Kapar, the file is closed. So therefore, it's as a person that sinned, waited a whole year in anticipation for Yom Kippur to come to in order to achieve Kapar. So finally, the day comes, so it's a cause for great celebration. So we party the day before Yom Kippur. Celebrate, eat, drink, enjoy. It's a perspective that is very far and distant from our perspective. It's coming from the opposite direction. We think of the almost with this, look at Yom Kippur almost with a sense of dread. And it's true, that has to be there. It's an awesome day. But to realize within the day of Yom Kippur the great cause for joy, this Karbus, it's a day of Rachamim, the Rabbi Hashem is close to us, it's a day to achieve Kapara. It's a day which has tremendous potential. So much so that Rabbi Yonah tells us there's a mitzvah say to celebrate its arrival. Awesome. From that perspective, we could go another step. There's an old Chassidish avot that a Chassidish Rebbe once asked, what's the difference between Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur? Both of them are major fasts. So the difference is very simple. Tisha B'Av, which marks the cause of all the tzoros and the suffering of Klal Yisrael, says, who could eat on such? How could a person eat on such a day? A day which marks such misery? How could a person eat? Yom Kippur, he said, who wants to eat? In Kippur, we have the possibility of being Dugma Samalocha. The Inuyim of Yom Kippur are also double-edged. In one sense, they're a form of penitence, in Kapor, as we spell out in Tefillah Zakah, that the Inuyim are a Mechapar. And yet, on the other hand, in all of this world, we attempt at times to achieve an experience which is transcending. which leaves the material and mundane world behind us, with the focus, our focus is captivated fully by the Rabbeinu Shlomo himself. Chassidim HaRishonim could capture this even in tefillah. The Torah talks about tefillah at the highest level as being a person that's almost left the material world behind. Similar to a Novi that achieves prophecy, he's tuned out of this world, plugged in somewhere else. That could be the ultimate experience of tefillah. On Yom Kippur, we have that possibility of a transcendental existence, a transcendental experience. To leave all the things which are our station in life, which are part and parcel of our normal existence, and yet we all know that they're only transient and temporary. The physical stage of our existence in this world, as compared to Netzach, Netzach, and to eternity, is very, very small. A chapter in our existence. On Yom Kippur, we can experience what we are ultimately about. The neshama is rooted in ruchnius and spirituality. As the Ramchal writes, the very basic paradox of human life. Essentially, he says, because we are a hybrid of both the geshem, the material, and the ruchni, the spiritual, there's almost no experience that we can find which will satisfy both. Material experiences will satisfy our physical self, but the neshama doesn't have a taste for it. The neshama can involve itself in ruchnius, but the physical self has little time in ruchnius. And this is the paradox of man's existence. Yom Kippur is the accentuation of the spirituality in man. And so it's not only a sense of denial in the sense to seek penitence for our violations as physical beings, but it's also the opportunity to experience the spiritual. An existence in this world, we're not concerned with what we're going to eat and for the next bit of comfort and pleasure that we may have. But rather, the focus is fully on what we can achieve before the Rabbeinu Shalom on the day of this phenomenal Kedusha and Racham. And this was captured in a word that I've shared with you before, a phenomenal word from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's father, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He said, we know that on Yom HaKippurim, at Marav and at Shacharis, we recite Baruch Shem Kivu Malchus HaLeolam Vod out loud. He says, I find this very strange, he said. If it were left to me, at Kol Nidrei, I would skip it. Kol Nidrei, a person's coming from a whole day of eating and drinking and celebrating. And Mutzi Yom Kippur, on the other hand, he's coming from a whole day of tshuva, slicha, and kapora. Kapora Savoyin is coming from Shkia Sachama on Yom HaKippur. So, is there a more sublime time in the human existence than Motzei Yom HaKippur? So, if anything, when are we dugmas hamalochim? It is a height. The height is Motzei Yom Kippur at Marav. So if it were left to me, he said, I certainly would have said that Motzei Yom Kippur at Marav, we should certainly say Baruch Shem Kivud Malchus HaLeolam out loud. And if anything, in Kol Nidrei, when we're just barely running from the Siddur Mafsekis, I would have skipped it. But he said, what we learn from this minig is that life is a matter of perspective. So a person could be rooted in this world, in the material. But what's his perspective? The perspective is for a day of tshuva, slicha, and kapara before the Rabbeinu Shalom, a day of pure spirituality. So that's a malach. A person could sit in heaven after Yom HaKippur, and what's on his mind? For most of us is a cup of coffee after the Tainasans. He says, if we sit in heaven but we're worried about this world, that's not a mala, that's a ben adam. There are unique individuals, the Vedicheva, came once to a town, incognito. He arrived right before Kol Nidre, in a shtetl. And he walked over to the gabber, some little shtetl, and he said to him, I'm a baltfiler. Do you have a fixed baltfiler? He says, no, we don't really have someone professional. He says, I'd like to daven. So he walked up to the Amud, and he davened Kol Nidre and Marv. After Marv, he stood by the Chazan Shtender the entire night. He recited Tillim throughout the night, all the way, nonstop. Didn't budge from there. They came to Shacharis. He asked the Gavra, could I daven Shacharis? Gavra said, yeah, daven Shacharis. Daven Shacharis, delayed. So he wants to daven Musaf. Kol HaKavod, daven Musaf. Came Mincha, again the same thing. Nila, Mar, didn't move. From the time of Kol Nidre till Motzei Yom Kippur, didn't move from the Chazan Shtender. So they were nishtayman about this person. So he came home to where he was staying. Someone invited him Motzei Yom Kippur. And they figured he must be exhausted. After 25 hours, he didn't move from the Chazan's bima, and davening all the tefillos is young. So he ran to bring him food. And he turned to the Vedichin, he's hungry. He says, oh, you say you're hungry. He says, I'm very, very hungry. So he ran to bring the food. He says, no, the Vedichin said, that's not the problem. I don't need to eat. He says, I didn't learn a whole day. I was davening the whole day. He says, quick, bring me a Gemara Sukkah. He says, I have to learn. And he sat and learned for hours, I think, through the night. Then they found out who was their guest. And they found that it was only the Yitzchak of Berdichev. But a person that could be so elevated from Yom Kippur, his concern about the Yom Tov was that I didn't have time to learn today. Today was a day of Tefillah. What happened to Talmud Torah? But that quality of Yom Kippur to realize that there's a day of ruchnius, of nobility of soul, in the greater sense, is part of what we have to capture in our perspective on Yom Kippur. So the halachos, all the halachos we have to see that is double-edged. They are kapara for our deficiencies, and on the other hand, they release us from the material world. They take our focus away from the material world, put us totally into ruchnius. There's no other day in the world which is in the entire calendar which is kula ruchnius in that fashion. Every day is a mix. Ruchnius and gashmius. We eat, we drink, we bathe, we do all the things that human beings do. Yom Kippur, we're released to the greatest extent from that a human being possibly could be from physical indulgence. So it is in one sense penitence, and in the other sense, uplifting. It puts the physical down and for kapara, and simultaneously elevates and accentuates the spiritual. That's the essence of Yom Kippur. And we need to come to Yom Kippur with that perspective as well. As halachic Jews, we emphatically state that all nobility and spirituality comes solely through the halacha itself. If a person attempts to acquire spirituality, but in an avenue which is not consistent with the halacha, does not meet the rigors and the demands of the halacha, then he will fail. Kedusha comes to a person solely through asiyas hamitzvos. And interestingly, Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, said that if one wishes to understand Yom Tov, its spiritual essence, the means of doing so lies dafka in the most intimate study of the halacha. And all the halachic principles which are articulated in Hilchos Yom Tov, Yitoyev, Chol Nefesh, etc., and all of the halachas within that body, within the halachas itself, is contained the essence of the spirituality as well. So halacha is not just a sideshow. that are incidental to the Ruchnius. We do not believe in ritual as ritual. That's a fundamental mistake to understand Yahadus that way. The clearest way of putting it was the way the Brisker Rov, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha, put it. In the English language, we would describe ritual as ceremony. He says, the reality is, he says, Judaism has almost no ceremonies. Judaism has mitzvahs. Yahadus has mitzvahs. Not ceremonies. Ceremony, you go to a graduation, so there's a certain, they march in a certain way, they march out a certain way, the first speaker does this, they have a musical interlude. It doesn't have to be that way. It's just a certain protocol of how it's done. In serving the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, it's not a protocol and it's not a ceremony. We involve ourselves in mitzvahs. And through mitzvahs, kachena b'mitzvah sechel, we attain kedusha. That's the essence of what Yahadus is. I wanted to turn to a number of the halachas. The truth is, I wanted to start with something which was not even on here, but it's a very interesting shayla which came up this week. A very unusual shayla. I recall that there was a maramokum concerning it, but I had to look back in the Shulchan Aruch. Because I don't believe that I ever passed in the Shaila yet based on this Sif in the Shulchan Aruch. I passed in a lot of Shailas, Baruch Hashem, over the years. But this Sif in the Shulchan Aruch, I don't believe that I ever had a Shaila in before, surprising as it may seem. And the Shaila is that someone who has an injury to their foot and normally wears leather shoes for that reason, are they allowed to wear the leather shoes on Yom Kippur because the foot is injured? That's one of the five inuyim. So that's where we'll start. In the Shulchan Aruch, we find in Siman Tofresh Yudalet, Sif Gimel, Hachaya, a woman that gave birth, Kol Shloishim Yoim, all 30 days, may in fact Mutorim Lino Les Asandu. There's a lot of issues. That's number one. Vahachayla Kiyotziboy, and a person that's ill, but is concerned apparently that he'll get chilled. As the Chofetz Chaim explains in Sif Kotten Yud, the feeling the cold of the floor upon their feet, that itself is enough to be difficult for them. And the Shulchan Aruch continues, a person that has an injury to the foot is also allowed to wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur. As I said, in all the years that I've passed the Shailas, I don't believe I ever had the Shaila before.
Now that we have rubber shoes,
that might be true for those that can wear, but certain situations cannot do so. Without getting into all the particulars and the details, that might, in fact, but the truth is, I would presume the following. I should really correct it. I should correct it. It really depends if we're dealing part of the deal is if it's an Issa D'Oraisa or Issa D'Rabbanan. If it's an Issa D'Rabbanan, then there certainly would be no reason to be Machmir. If it's D'Oraisa or D'Rabbanan, whatever, there's debate. We're not so clear on the other Inuyim, other than Achila and Shti, what exactly. Those inui, what exactly? Like, in other words, they're an inui, I should say, of Nilas Sandolim, if that's the rice of the Rabbanon, whatever, there's some question about that. But dealing with a person that has a necessity to wear leather shoes because of an injury to the foot, so they're 100% permitted to do so on Yom Kippur. Yes, sir.
Children, what age do children have to...
You know, general children are subject to the halach of chinuch. Some would say the children from the age of 6 are subject to chinuch, or the sources say 9 or 10. Generally, it's a relatively easy halach today to fulfill. And therefore, the tendency in today's world is because of the fact that we have alternatives, one doesn't have to go barefoot. The tendency is to be mechanach the children from a relatively young age. So they don't fast on Yom Kippur, so that's part of their experience of Yom Kippur, part of the chinuch. Even though, as I said, in the strict letter of the law, perhaps this man is later on. But we tend, in fact, to introduce this observance at a very young age with children.
Is there any minas pasigas or some of to wear, not to wear shoes at all?
There are those that hold that way. There are those that hold that the... we'll read it in a moment. There's a machloikas in the Shulchan Aruch, also little sandal, a minol shel oyer. Afilu kave kiteya, even though something which is used for a person that's an amputee, which is made of leather. Avo shel gumi, or shel kash, or shel beged, or shel shor min mutter, afilu lotzis ber milosh sarav. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that materials other than leather are mutter. Now, on top, that's the halacha l'maisa. But we want to talk about chumras. Yesh me'achronim shemachronim b'shal eitz, afilu enim b'chupa'ar. Some, in fact, don't hold from wearing wooden shoes. B'chein yesh me'achronim shal eitz, b'minol osim b'levodim of felt, b'osik k'minol shal onro, why, v'enu margish klau shu yochiv. And from their standpoint, in other words, they have such a good soul that you don't feel you're walking barefoot. So he says, according to them, and that's lacking in inui, according to them. Well, if he said, who then kalosh and shal guma yesh la'achma, rubber shoes, you also wouldn't be allowed to wear. So he says, v'hine av she'en limkos b'yad ha'makilim, the Chabad Chaim writes, even though we certainly cannot... condemn the minhag of Klal Yisrael. Most cheaters, including the Shulchan Aruch HaMeikel, because Mokom Yishev Shelo Nochal Hachbun Bezer Veleilof Pan Belo Yishabeget Kenov. That if a person's able to, he should wear, in fact, just wear socks and nothing else. He says unless he has to go Achinim Tzorach Lotzis Achutza. If he has to wear something to go in the street, so obviously then he should wear non-leather shoes. Chabad Chaim is even partial, in fact, to this particular chumrah, that a person should only go in socks. So it's not very commonly done, but if you want to say, is there a basis for it, certainly the Chabad Chaim is a pretty ringing endorsement that this is a good chumrah. Even though I said it's very rare to find people that observe it in today's world. Probably we have to look in the perspective of our own community's history. If you turn back the clock, two generations back, then one of the major battles in Orthodox shuls was, in fact, that people should not wear leather shoes to shul on Yom Kippur. This is a matter of battle. And what was instituted in many places, that a person that wore shoes on Yom Kippur, it wouldn't give him an aliyah. This is, in fact, how, in fact, they pushed to promote the observance of the halacha, that they wouldn't give an aliyah to a person that wore shoes. So, little by little, this came to be observed. And when one takes into view its history, so one understands that the fact that today it would be very, very rare indeed to find a person in Abad the Knesias wearing leather shoes. It's, you know, in the observant community, it's unheard of. So, but this came about, in fact, through Huawei, because there are Rabbonim were wise enough to push people to wear canvas shoes and then later sneakers as they became available. And consequently, that's the site of the minhag of our community. And that's why it's so strongly entrenched. Now, if we started off at the point where everyone was naturally observing it, then maybe there would have been a point of departure, maybe, for the Rabbanim to have pushed further to that. But when the current level of observance is the result of hard-fought battles a couple of generations back, that's the reason that it's unlikely in the community as a general thing that we're going to find people being more machmir than that. But that's part of the history of this particular halacha in our community. The first question on the list of the sha'ilas that we're supposed to deal with tonight is a very interesting one. Can we use deodorant? Now, this is a very surprising halacha because What's the other parallel that we have in Shulchan Aruch Baruch Chaim? The other parallel is Tisha B'Av. And in the halachas of Tisha B'Av very specifically state that if the purpose of, we have more among the Isurim of Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, Mesicha, putting anything, ointment, salves, etc. on the skin, on the exterior of the skin. And Tisha B'Av, the halacha is that if it's merely for the sake of the Havar Zayama, to remove dirt, the sweat, that it would be permissible to do so. And yet on Yom HaKippurim, Lahavir Zayama is specifically prohibited. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Tof Reish Yadalit, also Losa Chafilo Mitzis Gufo, Chafino Eino Elo Lahavir Zayama. Even if the entire purpose is just that a person should remove, you know, some dirt that's on the exterior of his body, he also should not do it. Because even though there are times there are heterim for rechitza, but rechitza, in fact, when it comes to rechitza, we're more makel than we are by sicha, which is very interesting. If a person had to wash because his body became dirty or he became, I mean, there's a case in the Shulchan Aruch that we can't even imagine doing. I mean, let's say it's one of these 98 degree Yom Kippurs. You know, we've had some Yom Kippurs, early Yom Kippurs. We had one in YCQ years back when the air conditioner didn't function and everyone still there shaking at the thought. And the temperature was skyrocketed to who knows where. So you have one of those types of Yom Kippurs. And the person's sweaty from head to toe. So the halacha is, he's let it go and he's very uncomfortable because of the sweat. He's let it go and wash it off on Yom Kippur. I don't think anyone would do such a thing. But there is such a halacha in the books. When it comes to Sicha, even if it's Lahavar Zoma or Machmer, the Rosh Hashanah says this is based on a Yerushalmi, which is more Machmer by Sicha than it is by Rechitza. And he says the reason for this is that Rechitza, if it's to remove dirt, is not always a pleasurable experience in and of itself. A person becomes clean. Whereas he says Sicha in general tends to be pleasant. So, whatever the Hezbollah may be, that's his particular explanation of it, but the halacha he endorses clearly that Sicha on Yom HaKippurim is also, even if it's Lahav Rezom, which comes out, so Yom Kippur is in this particular prat more chomer than Tisha B'Av, and Tisha B'Av it's mut. And Sicha, surprisingly, is even more chomer than Ritzicha. It's almost counterintuitive. We wouldn't have imagined it to be the case. But yet it's a clear din in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tov Reish Yudalit. So this is one of the surprising halachas of Yom HaKippur. So what are the limitations on washing hands? Now, Chitza, again, is prohibited both on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. And yet, for obvious reasons, the halachas of Yom Kippur are more chomer than the halachas of Tisha B'Av. Now, we'll start off with simple things. We know that in the morning, normally, we wash the Tilas Yadayim. Now, how far much of the hand one has to wash with the Tilas Yadayim is always a matter of debate on all the halachas of the Tilas Yadayim. One view states that it is merely the fingers that have to be washed. Nearly the palms and the back of the palms do not have to be washed, the back of the hands. And a second view in the Shulchan Aruch holds that it's necessary to wash all the way to the wrist. And even in Hilchos Netilas Yadayim itself, in Siman Kuf Nun Ches, it's not b'mashmo more than the fact that it's a chumrah to wash all the way to the wrist. So there is a very lengthy piece in the Bir Halacha where he argues based on, he cites the fact one of the Achrayim that wrote extensively on the Tilas Yadayim, and he quotes many Rishonim that say it's a halacha that one has to wash until the wrist. So he feels that one should wash until the wrist, that this is really mitzvah din, that it's not a chumrah. But that's already a chiddush that we need to have. But this is constantly debated in the halacha, wherever there's a limitation on washing, is how much of the hand has to be washed when we wash the hand. When it comes to Tisha B'Av and Yom HaKippurim, so there we take the stricter view. And we wash the hands in the morning of a tefillah only the fingers themselves. The entire finger till the knuckle and also the thumb. the entire thumb we wash. But the palm and the back of the hand itself, we don't wash. So that's the normal procedure for Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. But there are differences. There's normally a halacha that one is supposed to wash with tefillah. We have a principle of Hilchon Likras Hashem Elokecha Yisrael that we have to prepare for davening. Davening is not something we should just come to. We fellow, you know, says we'll open up the skylight and we'll come, we'll parachute in the shul, and that's it. Land, and as we land, we'll start davening Anis Vishmon Esrei. That's not exactly the way it goes. Davening is supposed to have a certain hachana. Those hachanas are obviously in a mindset, but those hachanas also were in a special kedusha. And normally the halacha states what we call stam yadayim, means I don't particularly know if I touch something which would render my hands unfit for me to make a bracha or not. I don't know. So the halacha is, when it comes to making a bracha, generally stam yadayim shevers lebracha. Unless I know specifically that I touch something which would render me unfit to make a bracha, I can make a bracha. But when it comes to tefillah, that stops. When it comes to tefillah, even if I'm a supik, and we'll see even further than that in a moment, I don't know if I touch something which would render me unfit to make a bracha, I still have to wash my hands. But it goes yet further than that. There's a Mogen Avraham. The Mogen Avraham says the following. In fact, he cited with the Mishnah Berurah. Suppose I sat down. So let's say mincha time. That's the classic time this will happen. I sat down to eat lunch. I wash. I mean, I'm mitzi, I'm eating. And the guys start yelling, mincha, mincha. And that's, you know, I say, listen, this is a good mincha minion for me. So I stop eating and I run to daven mincha. So the halacha is, now I know I washed my hands. And I also know, because I'm in the middle of a meal, I undoubtedly did not touch something which would render me unfit to make a bracha. And the Mogen Avraham's pasuk is, nevertheless, I still have to wash my hands for davening. I can't even rely on the washing that I did for the bread at the beginning of the meal. So apparently the halacha of hichon, that we have to do a positive step in preparing, that's beyond the halacha of being fit to daven. But there's a halacha of preparation for davening. A process of tara, specifically for the purpose of davening, which mandates the Mogen Avraham holds that I should wash my hands, even if I know them in fact to be 100% fit to tefillah. So washing the hands for tefillah is a very significant halacha. That's one of the reasons that when we built the shul, that I felt it was appropriate that there should be a sink in the hall. You know, an old-time shtiblech, there was always a sink for that reason, to wash one's hands. And yet, in the larger modern Orthodox congregations, sink, you had to search for it to find a sink. But which did not lend itself for people fulfilling the halacha of washing before tefillah. So that's one of the reasons when we built this Beis HaKnesses, that we put a sink right in the front lobby. So on the way in, it should be easy to wash for the tefillah. Now how does this affect Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur? What do we do then? So now we have a problem, we're not supposed to wash. Well, but washing is prohibited. Sicha may be usur, even if it's sicha, which is not for pleasurable purposes. But rechitza is only usur if it's for pleasure. If a person fell in a mud puddle on the way to shul and Yom Kippur, so he's allowed to go and wash himself off to get himself cleaned up. That's not for pleasure, that's just to get the dirt off himself. Now, what happens when we come to davening? On one hand, the washing for davening is certainly not for the purpose of pleasure, it's for the sake of a dvar mitzvah. So, should it be allowed or not? Now, in Hilchas Tisha B'Av, the Shulchan Aruch, we paskin that one is allowed to wash one's hands for davening on Tisha B'Av. When it comes to Yom Kippur, here we're not so clear. The Shulchan Aruch does not specifically spell out the halacha, but the Shulchan Aruch does talk about it in a fashion which suggests that we should not engage in rechitza for tefillah, just for tefillah. Why? Because the Shulchan Aruch writes the following. So in the morning, we wash our hands to prepare for the davening when we get up. That's fine. And then he goes to Sif Gimel. If he went to the bathroom and he cleaned himself with his hands, is mutter lirchot stav layodim uluchlochos. The imroitzel is palo, and if he wants to dav, afilu lo kine achnamim mutter lirchotzul kishrei etzba isav. And if he's used the men's room, and now it's time for him to daven, then he can also wash his hands, even though he doesn't know that he did anything which would necessitate washing again, but to davening he could wash. So the Chofetz Chaim infers from that if a person has not used the facilities, and it's merely a question of coming to wash on Yom Kippur for davening, so I went out, we finished Musaf, I went home, right, walked around, the air out a little bit, I walked around the block 15, 20 minutes, I came back a little refreshed, and I'm now ready to start Mincha. So if it would be a weekday, and I left after Musaf and I came back from Mincha, I'd wash my hands again. So the Chofetz Chaim don't enforce from the Shulchan Aruch, since the Shulchan Aruch only discusses washing for tefillah in the context of a person that exited the bathroom, that a person should not wash his hands just to prepare for davening if he hasn't used the facilities. And why? Even though, in principle, it's not Rechitza Shaltaina, but that we draw an interesting line in the Halacha. We say Rechitza Shaltaina is Mutter. Because really only Shaltaina, rather, Rechitza Shaltaina is Asa. So which that would tell me which anything really which is not Rechitza Shaltaina is Mutter. Now whether, so that really should fall into two categories. Whether I wash because I'm dirty, or let's say I wash not for tainan, but for whatever reason in the world. I wash because I made a bet with you that I'm going to wash my face. No, I don't need to wash my face. Normally I wouldn't bother to wash my face, but I made a bet with you, $1,000 for stocker that I'm going to wash my face. So I go to the sink, and I wash my face. So why don't I wash my face? Well, not a pleasure. I don't need to wash my face. And then the other day of the year, I wouldn't wash my face. But I bet you $1,000 for stocker. So now what's the deal? I didn't do it for pleasure. So it seemed to be mutter. But yet, in situations where we don't need it for the removal of dirt, the halacha is skewed really to be machra. And therefore, on Yom Kippur, not on Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av, we make them. It's not for tainer. I fell in a mud puddle, it's mutter. It's for davening, it's mutter. When it comes to Yom Kippurim, Chofetz Chaim is more skittish. If it's because that guy fell in a mud puddle, kolokol, he washed himself off. He's sweaty from head to toe. I'll pidin at least it's mutter to do so. But when it comes to tefillah, so there's no real absolute necessity to do so. And it's not l'havr zayimo. The Shulchan Aruch says, let's drop it and assume that it's not required in Yom Kippur. Now what's interesting in all of this is, what is the status of a kohen? What's the din of the kohen? Kohen goes to Duchan, Duchan on Yom Kippur, one of the days of the year. Now normally the kohen has to wash. So he writes, V'chein kohen o'ilo the Duchan no'ito yodov afo b'shein tohoiris. A kohen, where part of the preparation for the mitzvah is to wash his hands, should wash. The chorochit z'sheinem chavin bo l'tayinu b'teris. As long as he doesn't have intention, it's tzaradin, as long as the intention is not for physical pleasure, it's mutter. So therefore the Shulchan Aruch writes that even if he, as far as he knows, the yod of tahiris, means he came into the shul in the morning, he washed his hands, and he's been in the shul the whole day. He knows he didn't scratch his head, he didn't do anything which would render him unfit to pronounce the Birchas Kohanim. Nevertheless, he's supposed to go wash his hands. So, and the Mashmos again in the Shukhrah, V'chein koin oilu l'duchu noito yodov. The Shukhrah, that V'chein goes back, that a person uses the facilities, it's a sof kishro yetzva oisah. So he's supposed to wash his, just the fingers. But that changes. The rest of the hand, he says, is not a necessity, so he doesn't have to wash the rest of his hand. But unless it's dirty, it's something else. But for the koin, for the preparation for the duchu, even if as far as we know his hands are tohiris, but that's a necessary preparation for the duchen, so we allow him to wash his hands. So the mashkan the Shulchan Aruch only till the nachas. So this halacha is very fascinating with how it plays itself out. Halacha lemaisa. Now, what are the procedures of someone who is ill or must eat? Now, the Shulchan Aruch, in general, the halacha is very, very careful about the preservation of life. Reb Chaim Brisk, Zeichet Tzadik L'Vrocha, Brisk was renowned for its chumras. He used to say, but when it came to people that were ill, he was very quick to paskin that they have to eat even on Yom Kippur. So they said, Rebbe, you're such a meikel, you're so lenient in the halachos of Yom Kippur. And Reb Chaim's laconic answer used to be, no, not at all, he says, I'm not a meikel in Yom Kippur, I'm machmer in pikuach nefesh. And the halacha is very machmur b'kuach nefesh. That not only for vadet b'kuach nefesh, but even for sofet b'kuach nefesh, and something which maybe could lead to sofet b'kuach nefesh, that's already enough that we're very, very meikle. Now, it's interesting that the halacha devised an ingenious means of dealing with the problem of a person that's ill on Yom Kippur. And that is, we need to put it in context of all the halachos which deal with eating and drinking, and all the halachos in the Torah. It deals both with mitzvahs and averus before we come to Yom Kippur. A person wants to fulfill the halach of matzah on Pesach, a mitzvah deraisa. A person wants to eat korban Pesach, it's a mitzvah deraisa. So there's a shir, it's the kezayis of matzah. Well, how long can he take to eat the kezayis of matzah? Well, maybe he wants to take 6 to 10 hours. He'll start at Tzitzik HaChavim, and I'll take a crumb by crumb by crumb, and 10 hours later, I'll finish this kezayis. I ate a kezayis. Yet, if he does that, he won't fulfill the din. As we know, the halacha is there's to be Mechdei Achilas Pras. The time it takes to eat 3 eggs, 4 eggs, and that's broadly debated what that means. The Shiurim and Achronim are anywhere between 2 minutes to 9 minutes. What that's manas. But if it took longer than 9 minutes, it's not Yetzer. On the other side of the spectrum, a person sits down to eat chazer. So the Eidim come and they tell him, "I'll tell you, don't eat, don't eat." And he says, "I have a peek and I'm eating any, I don't care." So they tell him, "We're going to give you malchus. Person's going to give you malchus if you eat." And he eats the piece of chazer, the kezayis chazer, and it takes him 10 minutes to finish. He won't get malchus. It's why? Because it's broken down. What takes place in that time frame is considered one act of eating. If it took longer than that, it's already broken up into more than one act of eating. Now, even if we are to assume that the Shas debates of Chatzis Shir is Osim and Atayra Midrabanan, if I have less than the requisite Shir of an Isa, and even though we pass that Chatzis Shir is Osim and Atayra, but one does not get Malkus for Chatzis Shir. So consequently, this halacha, which we call Kedei Achilas Pras, is relevant when it comes to all manner of eating. When it comes to drinking, then we don't have such clear-cut parameters, but the shiras. And there we find different shiras. In our shas, we find that it's Kedei Achilas Pras. That's what we find in the Gemara increases. I believe in the Tosefta we find that it's Kedei Shtiyas Revius. That, in other words, to violate an Isra of drinking, let's assume we need a Revius. We're not even sure exactly, and many times what the share is. Let's assume for the moment that we need a Revius. So, a person needs a Revius. So a person takes a Revius of Chalev, and he melts it, and he has now liquid chalev, and he drinks the chalev. Or he drinks something else, macholas asuras. Liquefied form. He liquefied a revius of chazer, and he drinks it. Or milk from a behemoth tmeya. Milk from a behemoth tmeya, kalayotim and a tome is tome. So he drinks a revius. In what amount of time does he have to drink that revius? Well, they can drink that now. So one view, the Rambam says he has to drink the Kedei Shtiyas Revius. The amount of time that it takes a person to drink a Revius is a matter of seconds. The other view does not view drinking as different than eating. And the Shir is Kedei Achilas Pras. So as long as he would consume that Revius within 9 minutes, so he would in fact violate the law. He would give him Malkus. Now this was ingeniously used by the Chachamim to resolve the problem for the overwhelming percentage of people that are ill on Yom Kippur. And they devised the following, that to fully violate Yom Kippur in the fullest sense, one has to eat a kezayis b'chdei achilas pras. Otherwise, really, one didn't violate achilah b'yom ha-kippur. And one didn't violate drinking on Yom HaKippur. Consequently, what did they do? So they said the following. If a person's ill and he has to eat or drink on Yom Kippur based on his medical condition, so then the halacha is that he should eat the shir, and the shir is kikosevas agasa, which is about two-thirds of a kezayis. And the shear is molei lugma, a cheekful for Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur is a different shear, doesn't have a shear of revis, because it's articulated not in terms of achila. We find kol nefesh ha-shalo se'una. We don't find the lashon achila. If one is a different shear, achila is a kezayis, shear is a revis. But inoy, what removes the inoy? So chazal v'mashayer at two-thirds. Two-thirds of a kezayis, right, I'm sorry, two-thirds of a beyo removes the inoy, kechosevas hadasa, or a mole lugma, a cheekful. But again, it has to be in the requisite shear. So what did Chazal do? So what they did is the following. They said a person should eat, wait 9 minutes, and then eat again. And he can go on the whole day like this, and he won't actually, with the rice, really fully violate Yom Kippur. Now he can do the same with drinking. Drink a molly lugmuk. Wait 9 minutes. Drink again. So this was an ingenious solution for most people that have to eat on Yom Kippur, that they could still fulfill the din inoy with the rice in this particular fashion. So this is, now, what other caveat is, it's very interesting, that achila and shtia don't link together. Which means, let's say a person ate the shear of food, and then he drank the same amount, within 9 minutes, it would not be a problem. If he ate, and then ate again within 9 minutes, in other words, he ate the requisite amount, he waited 6 minutes and he ate again, he would violate the din. But if he ate the requisite amount and then he immediately drank, he would not violate the dinner. In other words, eating and drinking go on two separate tracks. So again, in other words, I eat, let's say the share is, I eat up to one fluid ounce. So until I eat the next fluid ounce, after I finish this eating, I wait 9 minutes and I start again. If I drink up to a fluid ounce, I wait 9 minutes and I drink again. That I have to do. Now suppose I want to eat and drink simultaneously. I'm allowed to eat and drink simultaneously. Eating and drinking don't combine with each other. Now part of what's necessary is to know what's a solid and what's a liquid. And that's not always so easy. In other words, if we take something like a yogurt, for example, how would we, or Jell-O, how would we classify it? As a solid or a liquid? Which way? Pretty hard. The applesauce. And the truth is, even ice cream or ices. In a discussion that I had with Rabbi Yoshev Shlita, in terms of Hilchos Brochos many years ago, the shaila is, if one eats ice cream, so what's the shir? Is the shir kizayis, or is the shir revis for the brocha achreina? So Rabbi Yoshev told me that he holds that the shir is revis, that since you slurp it, you don't eat it as a solid piece, it melts before you swallow it, so it's viewed as a liquid, not as a solid. So all of these type of things, I said, there are debates about it in Hilchos Brochos among contemporary poskim, what brocha achreina to make. And that's the reason that I always tell people when it comes to Yom Kippur to stay away from these things. If you want to eat and drink, is don't get involved with these things. I don't want to paskim on the derisa the scale of Yom Kippur. I don't want to take the responsibility to make an ultimate achrof if these things are solids or liquids. So that a person should stay away from. Now a very practical piece of advice, this was offered to me by a frum internist, says for most people, this is the issue is fluids. That's the principal issue of people, because dehydration is the biggest problem that most people face. Not everyone, but most people. So what he suggested is the following. He suggested that for the solids, one used melons. He says, why? He says, melon in the halacha is a solid. Chemically, it's 90% water. So once it gets inside, it almost doubles the amount of fluid that a person could have in the same amount of time. So that's what his suggestion, that for people that need to eat, and their principal concern is drinking, so they should drink, and the eating part should be done with melon. So therefore they're getting twice the bang for the buck. So it's a very, very interesting insight of a frum internist, and it's a very practical solution. Now, the problem is that in general, the idea of eating for any purpose on Yom Kippur is extremely foreign to us. Baruch Hashem, it's extremely foreign to us. But nevertheless, Pikuach Nefesh, it's still doicha, still pushes aside Yom Kippur. And therefore it's necessary if a person has medical issues that they go and discuss them in timely fashion before Erev Yom Kippur with a rov, so that all the necessary medical information can be assembled to make an appropriate psak. And this is a problem that's gone on through all of history, that it's difficult to get people that are supposed to eat on Yom Kippur to eat. The Chazon Ish, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, used to go around Bnei Brak himself on Erev Yom Kippur to go to the homes of many of the elders, the people that were not well enough to fast, to tell them, to instruct them that he wants, that he personally, that he wants them to eat on Yom Kippur. And there's a tshuva, I believe it's in the Maan Shik. Tshuvas and tshuvas form are very rarely addressed to women, as you know. Tshuvas are usually addressed to Rabbonim, to the largest extent, and once in a while to significant lay leaders of the community. But it's very, very rare in tshuvas form, historically, to find tshuvas which were directly addressed to women. And yet in the Maram Shik, we're dealing about 150 years back, there's such a tshuva. And the background of it was that there was a woman who was ill, and she lived someplace, obviously, in Hungary, in that area of Europe. And she was the Rav Paskin for her, that she was supposed to eat on Yom Kippur, and her family was quite concerned for her health. But yet to no avail, she was adamant that she was going to fast on Yom Kippur. So, and they had enough time, so they sent a letter to the Maram Shik. So the Maram Shik wrote her a personal letter that she's supposed to fast, and that she's supposed to eat on Yom Kippur, and she's not allowed to fast. And that letter is in fact recorded in the Tshuvas of the Maram Shik. But history doesn't record one thing for us. We don't know if she listened to the Maram Shik or not. That history didn't tell us. A boy size should be a bench to York, see what he would tell you.